What I'm going to talk about today is geologic hazards related to population growth. Actually, it's really probably a misnomer to say geologic hazards, because practically anything that you want to talk about in geology in terms of it's a hazard. So that people will think of some of the bigger things as being geologic hazards, like landslides or earthquakes. Or practically any natural process could be a hazard to man if he doesn't understand what he might get into. But I'm going to restrict my talk today in the time that I have just to earthquakes and landslides, because a lot of people don't understand the causes or what's involved. In the early days, when lightning struck a tree or a house or a building, man used to think this was either act of the devil or act of God, depending upon his viewpoint. And until he understood the nature of lightning and put up the lightning rod to control this, then he would blame it on something he didn't understand. Now that we know what the cause is, we can work with the laws of nature and save ourselves some trouble. The same thing applies to landslides or earthquakes. This is often interpreted in the past as an act of God or act of the devil, whichever case might be. And I've read a number of cases where there are myths where I know of an example in Spain, for example, where there was a whole village that disappeared, and the story was that the earth opened up a large crack because these were evil people, and they fell in the crack and it swallowed them up and they disappeared. And it's been checked by a geologist, and he discovered that in the area was a large landslide, and that a portion of the mountain broke down over the top of the village and buried it. And there wasn't any crack that opened up in any sense. Let me talk what is the cause of landslides first, and I have about 30 slides I want to get to too, so I'm going to talk to you for about 30 minutes and then we'll move into that. One of the chief causes of landslides is actually water. And also when you destroy the equilibrium of a hillside. Now, there's a balance of nature in hillsides as well as in life. Avalanches, any sort of mass movement. And I won't be able to touch on all of these. One of the things that man does on the mountainside will have a certain slope, and this slope has been established over long periods of time. When man comes along and he puts a notch in the hillside, he then destroys the equilibrium. He may be putting in a road, he may be putting a level place to put a house on. Whatever it is, he has destroyed the equilibrium. And what happens when he puts a notch in here, he cuts a bank, this allows the groundwater to seep out there. He affects the strength of the water which holds the particles together above him. He affects the pull of gravity on the slope here. There's nothing to support this. And in time, this thing will have to slump and get back to that same slope surface. So you're always reading about roads to the mountain, they have landslides, and it's a problem of the mountainside getting back to equilibrium again. One of the chief agents then, of course, is water on a heavy rainfall, which will saturate the ground, increase the lubricity, lubrication of the rock, so it will, particles will begin to flow and shift and slide. Another problem, and I can give you an example of the Palos Verdes area in California. Palos Verdes is along the coast. There is a step-like area down to the ocean here. These step-like regions are actually former wave-cut benches where the ocean level was up at a higher level. This land has come up and exposed the benches where the ocean used to cut in the cliff, and now the ocean is cutting down here to form a new wave cut bench. Because of this excellent overlooking area of the ocean, there's been a lot of
major real estate developments here, high-priced structures going up because of the view across the ocean. Part of the problem, however, is that this consists of some marine shales which slope toward the ocean, and in the marine shales are thin beds of bentonite. Now, bentonite seems to be an alteration product of volcanic ash. And volcanic ash, during some past geologic eruption, spread out over large areas, settled down into thin dust, maybe an inch, half an inch thick. Then this ash, because of its porous nature and fine texture, weathers rather rapidly to form a clay mineral. And the clay mineral is called bentonite. And bentonite has a unique property of absorbing water and swelling to 3 to maybe 10 times its diameter. And it, once it has the ability to absorb water, and then when these people build their structures here and level out the land surface, they expose some of these bentonite layers, then they water their lawns to start things growing, and then they just start lubricating the surfaces. First thing you know, the whole hillside begins to slide, and they blame the Army engineers for the road construction, and they do this and that, and they, you know, there have been many homes here where whole mountainside is slid and broken down these land surfaces. I've talked to a number of consulting geologists that work in this area, and they work with the constructors, construction engineers, and I know where they've dug in to put a platform, and they've exposed some bentonite layers, and the geologist says, you better get that covered up soon or you're going to have trouble. And the guy didn't get to it till a week, and by the end of the week, the whole house hillside above it is going down. And this is the sort of the problem that you run into with this particular bentonite. In Wyoming, there are the same types of bentonite layers. Army engineers are going to come in and build a dam. They're going to build an earthen dam. And the farmers up there told them, well, you better not use that hill to make your earthen dam. Even the beavers won't touch it. And they started building it, and they discovered what they were into, and they had to avoid it completely. But this is part of the problem of this particular clay mineral.
Is that the same, principle involved about the land taking this,
sinking a Long Beach? Is that what you're talking about, or is that something else?
No, getting back to the, you talked about the first one.
The equilibrium?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same sort of thing. It's reaching a new equilibrium to stabilize that slope. There in LA, for example, they were now required to have a geologic consultant because of all the damage that resulted. But in many cities, they do not. And part of the problem that I'm going to develop here is that the people who get on the city boards are the real estate people who want to control the land and see what's happening, and they don't bring in somebody who knows about the problems, and they will often build where it's almost geologically impossible to prevent any sort of landslides. And this has happened in some areas that I know about.
You will get the terra firma.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and related to the terra firma too, you know. Maybe you'll bring it up, and like the SST and the Sonic Boom have really started from a tremendous earthquake.
I'm going to get to other, like earthquakes that cause landslides, which would be the same thing, a vibration. Now, let me show you the geologic situation for the Gros Ventre slide, and which I think happened about 1925 or so. This was also, I think, in Wyoming. There's a nice canyon cutting down here, and again you've got a slope, and you've got a sandstone layer several hundred feet thick where the stream is cut down through, finally through time, to a shale layer. Sandstone is porous, has vertical joints in it besides the bedding planes. They had a cloud burst, and the rain came down, saturated the sandstone with water, and this water soaked into the sand, filled up the pore spaces,
So that water weighing about a little over 60 pounds per cubic foot added a tremendous weight to this mass of sandstone. The shale is composed of clay. Clay is very fine and sticky and becomes, once it gets wet, very tight and impervious, so water can't get through it. So the water that was soaking in here loaded up the sandstone with the additional water. Then the water couldn't get through the shale, so it was going along the bottom of it, lubricating that surface. The weight of the water plus these vertical joints overcame the friction, and the whole mass then slid down into the valley and across the surface here. This happened up valley, away from the city, so that nobody ever knew that it had happened.
Now, where was this, Larry?
It's in Wyoming. They formed a huge mass up here in an earthen dam, and the rains continued and built up the water behind it until it went over the top of it. And then it behaved like the Baldwin Hills Dam in California. Once it went over the top and got a crack, started cutting through, then the volume of water increased and suddenly it went out in a hurry. And so you had a wall of water, then it went down the valley about 100 feet high, and it wiped out a town in this process. So again, what you have here then is a sloping surface, a lubricated surface, and you're in trouble. No, but you now translate this to building up on the hillsides. As the population growth increases and we get out of the valleys because we run out of space and we start going up on the hillsides. And this is now happening in LA County area. And I know, I can't say when some of these places are going to go, but I know they're going to go because here's the hillside and here's the sloping sediment, which I can observe as I go through the roads up there. And they're sandstones and shale layers, and they've cut little notches up in here and they put houses on. And then periodically we have a heavy rainfall, and these things are, plus the watering the lawns, and they're going to get the right situation, and the strength is out, it's going to go. And this is one of the causes of landslides then. The big slide that happened in Montana, 1965, I think it was Montana, where a large mass of rock went down into a lake, do you remember, and went across and buried some campers on the other side. Where was that?
West Yellowstone.
West Yellowstone, yeah, that's okay. The situation geologically here is that you had a large metamorphic rock whose foliation planes were this way, but it's stuck up, the banding or the bedding that you see around here is the foliation planes, but it had vertical joints in it in this direction. And what occurred is they had an earthquake there which shook the rock, overcame the friction of the rock resting on it by the vibration, and then large masses of this broke along the joint planes, and several million tons of rock then slid down across the valley into a lake, created a 20-foot wave because of the impact on the rock, and the wave washed up and drowned a number of people, and also the rock went across the valley and buried a number of people. Well, I'm going to get into that next, okay? We'll talk about earthquakes. I just want to show that usually you destroy the equilibrium, you add water to lubricate on the sloping surface, you have bentonite or something like this. These are the natural conditions which are going to generate your landslides. Now let's talk about earthquakes, since you want to get into that, and then spend our time there perhaps more. Yes?
Before you do that, somebody was saying that it is possible to build on surfaces like bentonite and things like this and not have that sort of landslide.
All right. In some regions, what you have to do in order to prevent this, there are a number of ways that you can cut down the chances for a slide. One is to put in a lot of tiling to drain the water. And this is an expensive operation. I know of one situation where there were a series of homes along an area where they began to notice the pipes being break. So they called the water department and said, "Boy, you people do a very lousy job of fixing pipes around here. We keep having our water pipe. Could you please fix it?" So they fix it and come out 2 weeks later, it's broken again. "Why don't you do a good job?" Well, the whole hillside was slowly starting to slump.
Now you had that note. Yeah.
And once your pipe breaks, of course, it lubricates the surface more. And so they called in a consulting geologist, and he met with all the people in the neighborhood, and he said, "Well, what you're going to have to do is to asphalt the back side of your surface, put in drainage tile, drain that water out of there, and cut down the lubrication if you want to save it." And they figured it would cost each of the neighborhood there about $3,000 to put in this tiling. They had about $50,000 homes. And in the talking and discussion, the people said, just laughed at me, "You're ridiculous. You must be crazy to say that something like this is going to happen." 6 weeks later, all the homes went out, $50,000 loss on every one of them, because they didn't want to spend $3,000 to do what they needed to do.
Well, would that have saved it? I would think that that short period of time, that doing it at that point in time, would be too late anyway, wouldn't it?
It might have been. However, you don't know. And if they'd gone in and got it when they should have, before the rains came, which added to the problem, then they might have taken care of it. But, these are things you never know for sure. Yes?
What if you got a hill to be added on top called on?
Well, it depends whether you're talking about bedrock on the hill or whether you're talking about soil. I can show you an example here. What some people will do are almost unbelievable. Here's a house on the hillside. And so they put a big chimney up here with a stone chimney. Okay, there it sits. Beautiful chimney with a heavy stone. And they don't think about what foundation they built this on. First rain comes along, it washes out from underneath that nice stone chimney, and down it goes. No foundation. It's a little common sense to tell you that. A lot of people don't use common sense. Okay, what is an earthquake? Here is a force in the earth's crust which is pushing in opposite sense. And I won't have time now to develop the logic for all the forces. I'm just going to say that the forces do occur. And you begin to apply a strain on the rock such that it begins to bend. If at some point you overcome the strength of this rock in the process of contorting it, you have what we call the elastic rebound curve. I don't know if I need to spell all this out. This is going to snap sometime. And when it snaps, this part is going to rebound back that way, and this one's going to rebound that way to try to overcome that force that you're applying. And when that snap occurs, you will have a fault or a break in the earth's crust where you had a shift. And if I use this piece of wood up here as an example and apply a force on it, sometime it's going to exceed the strength and snap. And when it snaps, this is the earthquake. It's a rebound. Okay? If the rock is, once it's broken, of course, then it will snap into some sort of position, let's say there. Then the strain might continue to build up along that fault zone. And if there is sufficient friction, it may build up a strain again to stretch that out, and it'll snap again. Or it may just slowly creep along there. Or it might make a little tiny adjustments. Earthquakes are nature's way of adjusting for the strains that build up in the earth's crust. It's a good thing we have earthquakes. And there are a neighborhood of probably maybe 10,000 to a million earthquakes a year. This is the reason why I felt safe in predicting an earthquake today. Okay? But most earthquakes are of the type that are just small adjustments to the strains that are building up, and they're little slips. The ones that we worry about is where the friction is so great that the strain builds up and up and up and up,
before it makes a snap to adjust. Yes.
Then we should worry about some 12 or 13 in the past month or so in the Bay Area, you know, around the Danville, up in the Valley area. Sometimes we get 3-4 day knock, trimmage.
Well, these are relieving the strain. It's the big ones that don't relieve the strain that you're worried about.
What do you mean by the pressure?
All right. I need to really back up here. If I would take a cork and pull it underwater, low density material, this is out of equilibrium. If I let go of that cork, it's going to go bob up in a hurry, isn't it? Okay. To make a quick story fast, these mountain ranges that we have are low density materials that have been pulled down in the Earth's crust in the denser areas, and they're bobbing up to reach equilibrium. They don't come up fast like we're usually thinking in terms of time. They're going up at the rate of a few centimeters every 100 years in places. But these slow movements create strains in the rock somewhere. And where you're used to thinking of rocks as being very brittle and hard, in terms of the Earth's crust, the veneer of sediments over the top, if I could draw the Earth to scale on this board, the sediments would be thinner than that chalk line by a great deal. And any tiny movement on this piece of paper on here, which I would represent crust, any tiny small movement is going to affect that thin veneer. You see? And this is what you've got to think of in terms of geologic material. You've got to think bigger than you ever thought before. And any small movement is going to affect that thin veneer and cause strains. And we do have movements in the crust that are generated. All right. So there are perhaps 10,000 to 1,000,000 earthquakes a year. Probably out of this number, maybe 4 are dangerous. But the problem is, as population increases, the chances of people being where that dangerous one is going to increase, you see. We're going to, as we build more and more along the California coast, around the so-called Ring of Fire around the Pacific, which is a mountain building belt, as we increase the populations here, the chances for major earthquakes causing damage is going to become greater as time progresses. The number of earthquakes are not going to increase, but the chances of damage to people is going to increase because of the population centers will be in these zones. Okay. What happens when an earthquake occurs and we get this vibration? Come on, here we are. This is the Earth now. Somewhere below here in the Earth's crust, you get a shift along the zone, a break, a strain. From that zone, then, these vibrations radiate out in all directions. There are 3 types of waves that are generated. One that we call a primary wave, a second one we call a secondary wave, and the third one that we call a surface wave. The primary wave travels the fastest. It's a compression wave. It's a push-pull type of wave. Okay? When I'm talking to you right now, the sound of my voice is a compression wave that radiates out from where I'm standing to your ear, and it pushes on the air molecules back and forth, and it hits your eardrum and causes it to vibrate back and forth. The secondary wave is not a compression wave, but a transverse wave. And as the primary wave pushes air molecules back and forth, secondary wave moves molecules up and down as the waves travel in that direction. It's like taking a rope and shaking it. The rope itself doesn't move along, but the wave motion moves along. Okay? And you transmit energy to the end of the rope, and if you're hanging on to it, you know that I've done something because the energy travels there. But you've shaken the rope up and down, not toward you. All right? So both the primary and the secondary wave are generated when the earthquake occurs, but the primary wave travels faster and the secondary wave comes along behind it. Eventually, this will reach the surface, and that a point right above the surface here,
This would be the focus, and here would be the epicenter right at the surface. Once it hit the surface, then you generate a surface wave which radiates away from that point,
spreading out. This also is a shape wave. Okay, surface wave. So that if you're over here in your house, on the Earth's surface, and an earthquake occurs, the first wave that will get to your house will be a primary wave, which will go like this. The second wave will get to your house will go like this. And the third one will hit your house will go like this. Okay? So if you have a chimney up there and these things are coming in like this, it's no wonder that the chimney falls down. Okay? And people call me on the phone and last year when I had this big earthquake prediction in California, the whole of California was going to slide into the Pacific. And I got all worried about it and I got phone calls after phone calls. And I say, well, where's the San Andreas Fault? And I said, it's about 40 miles that way. And they would be a heap sigh of relief, you know. Then I have to tell them, well, usually you're safer when you're closer to the fault than when you're right away from it. And then they get all worried again. The reason why is that when you're closer to the fault that goes, most of these motions hit you at the same time, and it's one big shape or jump, you see. And when you're further away, they arrive at different times. And so one comes in like this, and a little bit later one goes like this, and then this way, you see. And all these three different motions going at different times coming in, it's no wonder that their houses fall down. Okay, incidentally, there's not much chance for California going in.
I told people back east when they asked me about Australia back then, I said that California's going to stay and the rest of the country is going to slide.
Californians have no sense to take air control.
Yeah. The whole of California coastline, where I showed you Palos Verdes with these raised beaches, the whole evidence is it's coming up out of the water rather than going down. So there's not any chance. Okay. Well, the only motion that we have, which I'll show you on pictures, is the right lateral shift. L.A. is sliding up the coastline. Eventually, it'll come up opposite San Francisco. And then the arguments about who has a better climate will cease. Well, most of them in California have a right lateral slip. This is due to continental drift that, Yes, there are regions which there are stresses building up, other regions which there is a steady slip, which seem to be adjusting to the strain. And I'll talk about that a little bit. Sonic booms will probably have no effect on, at least on earthquakes. Now, it could cause landslides. This is a surface vibration. Most earthquakes are deep-seated strains.
Larry,
yes.
How far does those shocks go down? Or do they travel towards the center of the earth?
Actually, the earthquake waves, depending on the intensity of this, will travel clear through the earth.
All the way through. In other words, it could be felt on the other side.
It could be felt on the other side if there is sufficient power to it. As these things tend to dampen out and die out in time. But if you get an earthquake of 8 on the Richter scale, it's going to be felt on the other side of the world. The compression wave will go right straight through even the core. The core is believed to be liquid, and compression waves will travel through liquid, as you can get sound waves to go through liquid. But the shake waves will only reach a certain zone. They can't. A transverse wave can't go through a liquid, and so you won't feel that power. And the surface wave may get if it's a big one all the way around.
Yeah.
All right. There are an awful lot of these people who have a heart condition. They may be past due for a heart attack. yet the best expert can't tell him when he's going to have a heart attack. We know he's in a bad, sad shape, but there's not any real way at the present moment of saying when he's going to have a heart attack.
What do they mean when they say we're past due for rain?
Well, we're past due for a rain right now here, you see. We haven't had one for 2 or 3 months.
Well, is there some way that she can predict, not mention it, but say that condition letters would work conducive to?
The reason they say this is that at least in the last 100 to 200 years in which we recorded major earthquakes, let's say in California, that the big ones seem to have, at least in that period of time, been 30 to 40 years in interval. Now, it might have been that those have readjusted the strain so that since then they're just sort of slipping along and there's no strain building up. But because the big ones have come in that sort of a cycle, and they say, well, now we're past due. But there's no scientific basis for saying this.
Are there cleavages in the earth as a result of earthquakes?
Well, all the rocks that are around here that are broken and shattered result from earthquake movement, and these are fault zones. And so these are breaks where strains are built up.
Does it happen? Deep gorges as a result of these things?
They may be deep breaks extending down as much as 75 miles. That's about the depth to which we get the deep focus. I'm sorry, I said 75 miles, I mean about 75 kilometers. But it's quite a ways down. Okay?
We had an interesting, somewhat involved in this underground detonation, mm-hmm. The biological implications of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had the Amichitka deep detonation from the device. That's an island off Alaska,
mm-hmm.
and revolutions, and the funny thing, you know, everybody said, boy, we're going to start an earthquake. Mm-hmm. Well, on this panel too sits what I have been told are some of the people who know quite a bit about earthquakes, and they said, well, it's not deep enough, so it should initiate one, and they kept telling the people that. Well, they were due to detonator on a certain day, and fortunately it was set up so they had to postpone it, and it was so fortunate because if they would have detonated then they should blame that Santa Rosa thing because they had a very terrific earthquake that next day, you see, so and they fired the thing, so if there was anything it was a premonition that it was but it worked, they postponed it for 2 days later.
It sounds like the same story on the fluoridation where they one town was going to fluoridate and they set the date and somehow they didn't get the equipment and for the next 3 weeks people were complaining about the water.
Yeah.
They hadn't even put it in yet.
Yeah.
And all the problems that were being caused by this fluoridation.
Yeah, sure.
There are two things I want to mention before I look at pictures, and that's the Richter scale. And this is a scale from 1 to 10 rating earthquakes. And you'll hear an earthquake of 5.6 and 8.4 and so on. 10 being the maximum and 1 being just a tiny little vibration. If you have an earthquake on the Richter scale of 2, this does not mean that the earthquake is twice as violent as 1. It goes up a factor of 10 each time. So the 2 is 10 times 1, 3 is 10 times 2, and so on. So time you get up the scale, it's quite violent. So I just wanted to call that to your attention. Then the other thing that I want to mention in terms of the population problem.
You got a question here from
you. Okay.
What would be number 10?
Well, 10 times 10 times 10, you know, it'd be a real violent. Mm-hmm. It's more powerful than even our hydrogen bombs in terms of.
There's no way.
Yeah. Yeah. One is just a little tiny
clue. It
could be 11, sure. Yeah. All right. The other thing I want to mention is the tsunami. If this is the ocean surface, and here's the California coast over here, and supposing we have an earthquake in the Pacific Ocean, where part of the Earth's crust, let's say, drops 15 feet.
So right here we have a break, and this goes down 15 feet, or that goes up 15 feet.
These are relative motions. We don't keep track of which one moves.
It's relative motion we're talking about. So we drop the floor of the ocean 15 feet right here.
This also means that the ocean level at that point drops 15 feet.
Okay.
All right. Immediately the ocean is going to try to level out that surface because of this drop in 15 feet. The wave that's generated here does not travel a few miles per hour like an ocean wave does.
It travels between 400 and 500 miles per hour. Okay.
And the distance between the crest is several hundred miles, and if you're, or I guess it's around 100 miles, and if you're out on an ocean liner, you would not even notice that it went by. It just rises up and goes down. But the energy generated here is tremendous. And depending upon the configuration of the ocean floor, if the wave is caused to be concentrated on a point and build up,
this 15-foot wave, as it comes into the floor, might build up 100 feet high.
And this is where we have a problem in terms of population now. Fortunately, now we have seismic stations where, because of the rate of travel of the earthquake as a compression wave, it will travel much more rapidly through solid rock than it does through the water, and we'll get a recording that this earthquake occurred. And to simplify a story quick enough, if you have three seismic stations, each of which records an earthquake, and I don't have time to explain how to do this today, you can tell that the earthquake is 300 miles from that station. You don't know where it is from that station, but it's 300 miles. The other person knows that from the time that the earthquake, the primary and the secondary wave came in, that the earthquake from here had to be 500 miles away. Okay? Two earthquake stations can now say it's either here or there, you see. The third one says, well, it's only 250 miles from here, or whatever it is. And three of them, they can pinpoint where that earthquake is. Once they know where it is, somewhere out here, they can say, well, Hawaii, you've got 2.5 hours before a tsunami's coming in. And you've got 2.5 hours to batten down the hatches and get the boats and the harbors and get people out of there. And depending upon the scale of this, they can have some idea how big a tsunami might be coming in. Now, one of the problems about telling people that there's a tsunami is that they don't understand the nature of the thing that travels 400 to 500 miles an hour, or the size of this thing, and you don't know whether to tell people or not, because you tell them and say, oh, I want to see it, and they go down to the dock and stand there with their camera for a picture of it. This is the title of it. And then they see this wall of water coming, and they can't run fast enough to get out of there. Or they go down there, and just before the tsunami comes in, there's a general trend for the water to drain away from the shore. And so they see all the fish out there flopping around and say, isn't this great? And they walk out there and they start picking up these fascinating things. And then they suddenly look up and here's this wall of water coming, and they can't run fast enough. So this is a problem. And before the warning system that we have, lots and lots of people drown because all of a sudden the whole villages look up and there'd be a wall of water coming in 100 feet high, which would go inland 3 or 4 miles and just drown everybody. But now that we've got this warning system, this Hawaii has a good respect for it. Part of the problem at Crescent City, California, is that they tried a tidal wave coming in at a time, and they yelled woof, you see, and each time they yelled woof, everybody evacuated and went out, and nothing happened. They did this 6 or 7 times, and nothing happened, but the 7th time, the earthquake occurred somewhere up in Alaska, and it generated and came in the proper direction, which it funneled the energy down through a channel, and it built up, and it went in a half a mile, and several people drowned, and they can show you the high water marks 8 feet high on some of the houses down there, where it came in.
What year was that?
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. Yeah. Didn't the Anchorage flood also? I mean, Anchorage,
yeah.
You know,
they had some very large tsunamis up there where the tidal wave lifted boats and carried them over.
Clear off into the, you know, top of the city, you know.
Yeah. So these are powerful things. But all of these...
We ought to get the film on that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I saw it the other day.
That's a good one. Yeah. But anyway, these are natural things that part of the Earth's process of adjusting to strains, yet we tend to blame them on God or the devil or whatever, not realizing that you've got to build and construct for these things, and it's just part of the natural process of the Earth.
You know that big slide in the Fraser River many, many years ago, was that, what was the cause of that? Do you remember? Or was that just some, maybe they were blasting or something? You know, it really got out in the Fraser River. I didn't know about it from a biological standpoint, because, you see, it's very important to that area there for the salmon runs. Yeah. If you knock out and you block it, and you block the salmon run up, you're going to knock out at least 1 year from the industry.
Yeah.
And that's when the University of Washington got going, and they got a fish that they changed the cycle on, so that they can come back in 2 years instead of four.
Yeah. I've got so many stories I could tell you, but I want to show you the slides here. I think I'm just going to have to stop from all the things I could go on for hours on. And let's look at slides for a bit. Yeah.